Yeah, put you on record. Okay, you're on, Laura.
I got to hit the got it. Okay, Legislator Litz, would you like to lead us in the pledge?
Sure. Let me just tap this thing and get that. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda is approval of our May 9th, 2000. We don't need to do a roll call, do we? Nettie, have everybody?
Mm-hmm. I'm fine.
All right. So I'm looking for a motion to approve the May 9th, 2022 meeting minutes.
I'll move it.
Legislator Fabiano, second. Legislator. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And we have two absent. All right. So with that, should I have one of the county deputies introduce the guests, or Director Doyle, would you like to introduce our guests regarding the Emergency Operations Center?
I'm happy to make the introductions. I just want to clarify, you put Hank Gross as, that's Christopher Young. He's one of our head architects. The phone number is Hank Gross.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Where?
2923 is Hank. The one that says Hank Gross right now is Christopher Young. He is an architect from Urban Architecture. John Montaigne is from GPI. Kevin Karn is one of our internal consultants. Give me the name of your something tech, right?
Thanks.
Yes. And I don't see Rick. Was Rick not able to join us?
No, he's
there. Rick Alfandre is another one of our architects.
Okay, he's on. And Director Lauren Johnson just joined us. Okay, and as you speak for the transcript, if you're answering questions or just please state your name. You know, hi, this is John Montague, but I appreciate that.
Sure thing.
Okay, so let me I'll give you the ability to start your presentation. Are you ready, Rick?
I think it's probably Christopher that you should give back.
Can you, if you can give it to me, that'd be
okay,
great.
Okay, Chris, go ahead. You're good.
Okay.
All right. Okay. For a quick thanks for letting us come on. I want to do for a real quick just sense of who we are. I'm Christopher Young. I'm working as the project architect with Urban Architects. And we've been working sort of hand in hand with Rick Alfandre from Alfandre Architecture and also with John Montaigne, among others, from GPI, both of whom are on the call. I know my own video keeps freezing. Sorry about this. But can you see my screen at least?
Yes.
Okay. That's what matters more anyway. And we want to sort of give you a quick overview in terms of where we are with the Government Operations Center and the resolutions to purchase land at Paradise Lane. I'll just sort of do a real quick run through for what we had, sort of steps we've gone through. We were given from the county itself some parameters of where to look and a number of kind of sites to look through. For maybe 20 or so sites, we probably took a decent look at about 10 of them and a very close look at a handful. Coming down, here we go. At our 10 sites. And really sort of came down to favoring Paradise Lane over all of those. Most of them were in or right around Kingston. And with Paradise Lane, of course, down in New Paltz. We'd gone through a rather kind of long, lengthy, somewhat exhaustive process working with Emergency Services Department, working with County Executive's Office, working with the Planning Department to sort of figure what, would suit the purposes best for the PSAP and the Government Operations Center. And that entailed both site selection that I would like John to go through in a moment, and also working on a little bit of conceptually what the building would be like, how we'd fit the program in, kind of test fitting things. And along the way, actually realizing that, you know, there might have been some other items to factor in. But really, I'd love to turn over to John for kind of how we went about narrowing down the sites.
So we can say, Christopher, you can, yeah, that's fine. You can go to the site criteria. And actually, I'd like you to just go to the next slide real quick and then go back. The reason I have this slide on here is this is the criteria checklist that was compiled as the first step in our evaluation process. Dennis's office was instrumental in evaluating properties throughout Ulster County, working with us and the whole design team. And as Christopher said, there were probably at least 20 sites that were looked at in this whole region. Of those, we used this process to go through to shortlist down. Initially, we were looking to try to get down to about 6 sites. We actually shortlisted down to 10, did more detailed evaluation on 10. That was then dropped down to 7 sites that we looked at that really had promise. And then that shortlisted down to about 3, and then ultimately to the 2 that I'm going to talk about this evening. The things that we looked at in here under safety, that's kind of just a generic area that you're looking at. You're doing a government operations center, emergency operations center. So the things that you want to be careful of is you don't want to be too close to an airport. You don't want to be too close to a main transportation corridor for rail freight. You don't want to be too close to high voltage towers, high pressure gas, those sorts of things. On the environmental screening side, there are databases that the state has and other government agencies have that have things such as historic properties that you want to make sure you try to avoid on your site, federal databases for things such as hazardous materials, Superfund sites, things like that, threatened and endangered species, potential for ground radon, and so forth. One of the most important things for this emergency services portion of this project is the 911 trunk feeds. As we went through this process, we got more information on that particular element. There is a strong desire to have redundant 911 trunk feeds. Those are the main ground trunk feeds. It turns out that the New Paltz area is really the only area in the county that has redundant trunk feeds from the north and from the south. So that's one reason that Paradise Lane had a very high mark, because it had that. The other thing you're looking for are other public utilities, public water, public sewer, natural gas. Redundant electric is also incredibly important. You can't have your systems go down. The facilities themselves will have generators for backup, but it's much better if you have redundant electric power coming in for multiple feeds. And then on sites, there were a number of sites that we looked at that did not have water or sewer. So you have to have the ability on those sites to be able to do either a septic system and a well. The next area that we looked at is site characteristics. Site characteristics are the things that a lot of people think of as being environmental, things like wetlands and floodplains. It also covers things such as primary agricultural soils, principal sole source aquifers. You know, they are things that you don't really want to locate over if you can avoid it. And then obviously, you know, other things such as, you know, we do have to be somewhat compliant with local zoning, even though the county has some provisions to avoid that, but you want to be somewhat compliant. So surrounding land uses and compatibility is important. The next category that we looked at is lot configuration. So As in the very first few slides that Christopher had shown, one of the things we were looking at is about a minimum of a 5-acre parcel. But that 5-acre parcel also has to have a reasonable lot to width ratio. It has to have frontage on a road, lot to width ratio, so that, you know, you can't use a property that's about a piano key shape. It has to have some dimension to it. And then because this facility is planned to have a long duration, there's also a strong desire to be able to have room on that property for future expansion, future additions. Finally, the last two categories really are accessibility. You know, is the site accessible from a good roadway network? Is there a good population area in that area where you're going to draw staff from to service the facility? And then are there any other large natural obstacles that would make it difficult to develop a site? For example, we looked at one site on Frank Sotile Way, which had a very large gully in the middle of it, which would have required a bridge, and it would, didn't really kind of fit the bill, so that one fell off. Public services, we talked a little bit about, you know, public transportation, other things, not very heavily weighted on this, but there is a desire to have the ability for people to use public transportation if needed. And then finally, availability. Obviously, if the county already owns a piece of property or has more control over it, it's a more desirable location. However, there are more properties out there, obviously, that the county doesn't have full control over. So the next part of that is, you know, is it on the market? And if it's not on the market, it is something that that you know anything about for being able to access that property. So as I said, we looked at, we ultimately shortlisted 10 properties. The next slide, Christopher. Zoom out on this one now. After we went through each property, we did a summary of each site and a ranking. And that ranking then led to the chart that you see here before you, where all of the 10 sites that we looked at were given scores in each one of the categories that I just described: safety, environmental, utilities, site characteristics, lot configuration, and so forth. And you'll notice on this chart that, you know, we had a low of about a 21.3 to a high of a 24. Those are all things that that weighed into the ranking based on the certain characteristics that each site had. And after we looked at all of this, the other thing that we took a strong look at is that whole category of redundant utilities, because that's really critical to this facility. Of these 10 sites, as I noted before, Paradise Lane is the only one that has redundant 911 trunk lines and is the only one that has good quality three-phase electric power service at the site. Most of the other properties had other limits on broadband, Wi-Fi, excuse me, couldn't think of the word there for a minute, as well as some other limitations on other utilities such as gas, electric, and water and sewer. So then the very last thing that we did is we looked at the costs for development on the various properties. As you'll notice on the very right here, there are site development costs. Keep in mind that this is just the site development costs. There are also building related development costs, which is the bigger chunk of the capital budget. But on the site development costs, we wound up doing concept site plans for 7 of these properties. And those concept site plans included looking at utilities for those sites, grading, the need for any type of retaining walls, how the electric service and gas service would come in, whether a site, if it had, if it didn't have redundant power, whether it would need multiple generators, things like that. And those were all then factored into the cost for site development. And you'll see that in general, all of the sites that we looked at had a lot of similarity in costs, with the exception of potentially Golden Hill. Golden Hill is a facility that the county already owns. It's a property that you already own, that the transportation garage is being looked at now. And it has the existing Department of Health Mental Health building on it. The one thing that we looked at on that property was the potential to redevelop that particular building. It's somewhat underutilized right now. And so we did do a full concept design and evaluation on that. Christopher, maybe you can show that site plan. So in any project for the EOC, there are separation requirements from where parking can be and where the building has to sit. And that separation requirement is about an 82-foot setback from the building face. And the reason for that is you want to keep vehicles away that could potentially, you know, it's blast protection and other things, safety protection. So in order to redevelop the Golden Hill site for this, for the adaptive reuse, we would have to take a lot of the parking that's there right now, and we would have to make it green space, and we would have to limit it. But having said that, the site actually does lay out in some ways to be suitable for the project. Christopher can go into the building a little bit later. The difficulty on this, obviously, is that you have existing services in that building. So two things have to happen on this site. The existing occupants of the building have to be relocated somewhere. There's a time and a cost associated with that. And the existing EOC building that's next to the historic building, that existing EOC building would have to come down to allow the circulation to come around. Now, that building's redundant anyway because you're going to be moving them into this new building, but it just adds complexity to the redevelopment of that property. I'm going to now quickly go to the Paradise Lane site, and the nice thing about the Paradise Lane site is that it is right at the New Falls Thruway exit. It's adjacent to it. It's a very flat piece of property that was agricultural land, so it's got good draining soils. It has, as I said before, the redundant electric and 911, but it also has the ability to have water and sewer on it. And if it doesn't have the sewer, then it easily can handle a septic system because the soils are conducive to that, very good for it. The other nice thing about it is that the site right now is a vacant site. There was a development proposal that was planned for it, and they had taken all the buildings down and pretty much cleared the site. But the only problem that we have on the Paradise Lane site is that it is an old agricultural property. It's an orchard property. And as most orchards and people that live in Ulster County know that have developed and redeveloped properties, they use pesticides on it. Those pesticides tend to stay in the topsoil, so there is some contamination on the site from that. It is something that would have to be dealt with on this site. So, you know, fair enough, we struggled with that a little bit. So we did additional research on that. We contacted the company that did all of the testing on it. It's a company called CTML Associates Engineering. We gathered their information on the soils, and then Dennis's office did a good job of arranging meetings and calls with the New York State DEC to understand what the parameters are on there. And based on that, we have a very strong understanding of any mitigation that would have to be done. Pesticide-laden soils they're not soils that leach. The pesticides just stay in that soil, and the typical means of mitigation for that is you berm up the material. You push it, berm it into an area on the site that you can use for landscaping. You put a layer of topsoil over it, you do some planting on it, and it's stabilized, and that is takes care of the remediation. And based on that, and all the investigations we did, that's what led us to really favor the Paradise Lane site. And I'm sure there'll be some questions as we go along, but I'm going to stop on the site side for right now and let Christopher talk, and maybe he can go through into the sizing of the building and what we've discovered on that from the programming side.
Sure. Thank you, John. Very quickly, I wanted to kind of touch on a little bit of what we were given. Originally, county was expecting that they'd need about 9,000 square feet for specifically for programming, and then maybe end up at about 11,000 plus in overall. When we went through our design exercises, we kept certainly on any space by space basis, we kind of kept that as close as we could. Just comparing kind of what we were given to what we were ended up. Maybe we're over by 20 square feet or under by 5 here and there, but more or less we adhered strictly to that. What kind of made for some additional factors are more items that may not have been kind of thought of at the very outset when the RFP was put together. So something like some printer plotter rooms or a quiet room for the call takers to be able to decompress after a pretty intense day or hour. And then mental health, mobile mental health was not something that was originally in there, but that's now been added in. So as we work that in, the square footage for the building increased, and we kind of had a bit of a loop back with John in terms of what we would need, for the site. So both of these items, both these concept plans here are allowing for a building size that would fit what's needed kind of on a day one, and then also trying to account for building expansion, future expansion as well. And when we went through, just kind of schematic design, trying to make sure everything, one, make sure things fit, two, to kind of keep it as tight as we possibly could, three, to work with emergency services to make sure that this, in fact, would suit their own needs. I think we kind of have figured a good working plan for a new building, presumably at Paradise Lane. And then we also just on the idea of Golden Hill, we also wanted to test fit. Well, how how would that work if we ended up switching to the adaptive reuse? Not as developed, but at least we were able to kind of test and make sure that that's an option. That said, as John was pointing out, you know, we still were feeling that Paradise Lane ended up being the stronger, really the best site, given the fact that, you know, the undeveloped land that's kind of should be quicker to build on, the fact that in building new, we can make for, you know, much better. We can make for like a high efficiency, building, you know, healthier building in that regard. The redundancy for Verizon, for Electric, for Central Hudson. So that really kind of ended up being, you know, where we landed both, I think, as on the team, the design team, and also I believe that the county stakeholders also would share in that feeling. Just kind of skimming through, I want to kind of move along because I don't want to assume we've got all of your evening here. But when we were comparing costs, trying to figure, you know, to the best that we can at this level, you know, high, still a bit of a high level when we don't really have a building design, but just trying to figure, you know, what are we looking to? What was the county originally figuring on? What would we be talking about at Golden Hill for adaptive reuse? What would we be talking about for Paradise Lane? Some of the factors that we have are on both sides. You know, Golden Hill, if that ended up being the direction to go in, there would of course be the moving the health department, and then whether it's, you know, purchasing land or building for that, let alone kind of a time factor, which could really and kind of change up the whole schedule in that regard. It would be one issue. Paradise Lane, as John was already speaking of, would have remediation issues. But that said, you know, we had given to the county the estimate for what the soil remediation would account for, amount to, and that then factored right back into their own negotiations with the current owner. Rick, are you I know Rick was driving. I don't know if he's still on and available, and perhaps can speak a little bit in terms of the process that we've gone through with the county.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So very briefly, since I'm driving, as John and Christopher mentioned or clearly stated, this process has been a very robust, lengthy, detailed, and not necessarily linear effort to identify the appropriate site for this facility. The winter ice storm certainly affected the program and the thinking around what the building needs to be and where it should be. One of the, I think, important point takeaways with respect to the Paradise site is that after subdividing off the approximate 6 acres that the county will need, there's going to be a residual 20 to 22 acres of developable land. And that is prime real estate, certainly for solar and probably for housing, probably mixed type housing, and at least. I think that even though the initial cost to purchase the property may seem high to some, I have to keep in mind that the residual value is going to be $1 million, $2 million, $2.5 million ultimately back to the county when the time comes, and there'll be other benefits to the county as well. Certainly we can make a good building at Golden Hill, but we'll make a great building from ground up. It'll definitely be more resilient and near net zero or net zero carbon neutral. And I think we'll get done more quickly than if we have to do a rehab.
I do have a couple of questions about the property, and I think they're going to be all over. Was this the old, it was going to be the Wildberry?
Correct.
Yeah.
It was okay. And are you going to subdivide the property now in anticipation of not holding the whole piece?
This is for the purchase of the entire 58 acres.
Okay.
The idea would be that we would subdivide the 6 and then potentially do something similar to an RF2 like we did up on Golden Hill for housing.
Okay. Also, I was wondering why we were purchasing without, you know, if we're just going into the CEQA process, but I see that there has been extensive testing done on the site. I'm assuming it's like the lead arsenic in the soil. But the one question that did pop up is sewer 6 out there in New Paltz is already kind of maxed out. Will you, as part of whatever negotiations you have with the town, is that going to be, are you looking at helping them upgrade their system, or do you think you'll be completely off as far as municipal water and sewer goes?
We're going to probably start off with the septic, but there has been ongoing talks with the town, and if they were able to get funds from the state to expand the sewer and water to this location, then we may become a user.
Okay. I see Eric Stewart has his hand up.
Thank you, Chair Petit. There was just a couple of things I wanted to comment and ask about. First of all, I wanted to say that I thought that the idea of locating this facility here, among the many qualifications that have already been stated, is that I think it's a good idea to do something like this in a location outside of Kingston. I mean, not that I have anything against Kingston. I think Kingston's awesome. But I know that many legislators have felt that a lot of our efforts are too focused on Kingston, and doing something further south, I think, is a great idea. So I wanted to, you know, commend you guys for that. I guess my question, I have the unfortunate, it's not unfortunate, but I have the advantage of having heard Dennis Doyle's presentation about this project to the Energy and Environment Committee the other evening. And I guess my concerns would be, or not really concerns, but I guess my questions would be, what other considerations are we thinking about for, you know, the rest of the acreage? I see that a lot of this area appears to be heavily wooded. I was wondering if maybe a conservation easement might be considered for some of the woodland. And I believe Rick Alfandre just a few minutes ago said housing was something that might be appropriate for some of this additional acreage. And I was just wondering how appropriate housing would be considering the issues that we've heard about soil contamination.
So that can be pretty easily fixed and remediated, and they do it regularly. As John said, it's an easy remediation. It's basically burying and berming the heavy metals, and they don't go anywhere. They kind of, once they're in the soil, they stay in the soil. And so we can remediate, and it's in the DEC Brownfields program. So every dollar that's spent remediating is a tax dollar that can be used for housing. It can be used for a developer. We can't, because we don't pay the taxes. But as you're looking at this page right here, I think the idea would be that the side of the parcel that's away from the thruway and kind of closer to 299 would be a good location for the housing. We're in the part up, yep, that's being highlighted there. That's where we're slated to be. Everything down nice. South, for the most part, is wetlands that we would plan on conserving. There's a large, about 20 acres of wetlands here. The other piece that we've talked about is a county-owned roughly 4-megawatt solar array that would help us go a long way to get to that net zero, as well as doing other really, you know, having high efficiency everything in the building.
Right. But
the solar array will definitely help as well.
And I understand that there's also going to be solar on the building itself, correct?
We're considering it.
Okay.
It just depends on how much solar can you really.
Right.
You know, okay. You put 4 megawatts there, that's going to be a large our solar array at the landfill in the town of Ulster, I think, is a little under 2 megawatts. So,
great. And the other thing, Mark, on this site is the area that we'd be looking for that is to the south of where the EOC building would be. There's a natural divide there, and it's got phenomenal southern exposure. And the building itself has phenomenal southern exposure. And
you can't is perfect for solar, obviously. So,
yep, exactly. Yay.
Yep.
Are there any questions? I can only see 4 tiles with the image up, which is amazing because you can show us what we're, you know, and answer the questions. But did anybody else please speak up because I can't see you? Okay.
Just to be clear, the building's going to be use way more energy than the amount of solar we can put on the building roof. Sure. So it's good to be able to add solar to the site.
Great. Also, I think it's great that we're working with a local architect. So that's another plus. So, and Rick did not pay me to say that. So.
Thank you.
So resolution 308 and 309 are, is it all right with the committee if we move those up? In case we have any other questions while we're discussing the resolutions.
Good idea.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so with that, I'll be looking for a motion to open up resolution number 308 for discussion, declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under New York State Environmental Quality Review Act for the purpose of constructing a government operations center. Do I hear a motion?
I'll move it.
Legislator.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Legislator Fabiano. Do we have any other questions on this? Since we have Director Doyle and Everett Erickson's here too. Okay, it's quiet. All right, so, now I can see everybody. Okay, so hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I'll abstain. Purposes of an employment.
I thought they looked familiar. Okay. So that's been passed. Next is resolution number 309, amending capital project 607, government operations center, and authorizing the acquisition of real property located at Paradise Lane in the town of New Paltz for the purpose of siting a government operations center. Do I hear a motion to move it for discussion? Thank you, Legislator Fabiano. Seconded by Legislator Nolan. I think my questions have been answered because I didn't realize we were so far along in the process.
If I could just make one real quick point here, and that is I believe the legislature has ordered a second appraisal, which will be done at some point next month. And, you know, we are not going to close on this until we get that back. But I just wanted to make sure that everybody.
Now, I don't know why. I thought the capital project was we had set aside $3 million, but I'm seeing that the $3 million is more for the purchase and the total project's going to be closer to $25 million. So we are all set in our capital budget, or is any of this going to be ARPA money or other funding?
This will all be capital money.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Legislator Litz. Thank you. Okay, well, thank you very much. Congratulations, Everett. And Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think you're going to be everybody's favorite when this building goes up. It looks like it's going to be an amazing.
This looks like it's an awesome project. It really does.
Absolutely is. Thank you, everybody, for your support.
Very nice presentation. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, we're moving back over to resolution number 289. amending the 2022-27 capital improvement program, establishing and funding capital project number 635, ARPA Parks Program. Do I hear a motion to open it for discussion? Legislator Stewart, seconded by Legislator Nolan. Legislator Stewart, I'll put you on deck since you were the sponsor of this resolution.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Petit. Several months ago, I actually put forth a resolution requesting funding for a park project in the village of High Falls in the town of Marbletown for a considerable amount of money. And that was shot down by the ARPA committee because they felt, even though that the project would serve as a nexus for trails serving the entire area, that the park project was too focused on what was going on in the town of Marbletown and didn't really benefit the larger county as a whole. And taking that into consideration, I decided that I would put forth a resolution that was based, that was modeled very closely on a resolution that was put forward earlier to the ARPA committee by legislators Petit and Maloney. And under that particular resolution was requesting funding for water and sewer projects around the county. And basically it would create a umbrella funding mechanism where the municipalities, well, the different municipalities could, you know, approach the committee for specific projects. And that would have a $500,000 matching limit that would be matched by the communities. And so seeing as, you know, I think parks and trails are a vital part of our community, I felt that, you know, this might be another way to go about getting the park project that I support in High Falls funded, as well as, you know, projects all over the rest of the county. I mean, I figured that every single municipality in the county has park projects and trail projects that they would like to pursue. And so this just seems sort of to be sort of a natural fit. I also just got off the phone, actually, a few minutes ago with Legislator Hewitt from the town of Rochester. And he would like to add his name to this resolution, and he would be requesting funding for a project that he's been working on in the town of Rochester for quite a while. So, like I said, this would be a match of 50%. There is a total of $6 million in the kitty for this one, and I hope you guys will consider supporting it.
Legislator Litz.
Yes. That was the question I had. In the whereas of the resolution, it says $6 million. But if you look down at the bottom of the resolution, it says it's $5 million.
Right. I noticed that today.
Which is which?
Oh, well, that's a very good question. And I'm sorry that I did not catch that discrepancy earlier. I discussed the funding of this with Amber Feaster. And, you know, from the legislative offices and also Vicky. And I was told that actually there was more funding potentially available than either of those figures. But I guess the short answer is I'm not sure, and I would need to do some research on that. And my apologies for that discrepancy.
Now, Legislator Nolan, and then Legislator Fabiano.
Thank you, Chair Petit. Yeah, this is a little bit of a conundrum for me because I did not support the other resolutions because I felt that setting aside a certain amount of money ahead of knowing what the actual project requests are isn't the best way to get the best projects to move forward quickly. You know, it just gets projects that come forward to move forward. So that's my preference, is that we don't do that. On the other hand, I do. There is a project in Shandaken in a county-owned corridor that has broad support and has a feasibility study and needs funding in order to move forward. So, and Legislator Stewart makes a good point, having brought a specific project and not had the project be supported, and therefore trying to set up a process so that other projects could fairly compete with the project that he is advocating for. So we've got a little bit of a circular line of reasoning here in terms of how to provide funding. And I'm not sure how to break out of that in a way that brings the top projects to the fore. In 2021, the county did do outreach to get community input on the types of projects to fund and some priorities. And so we have some guidance from that. We now have the ARPA committee's scoring matrix. And so I'd like to hear from others about this, but I think my inclination, I supported Legislator Stewart's first proposal, and I felt like that was a better way to do it. But if that's not going to work, then maybe we need to rethink it. And so if others feel that this is a better way to go, I'm not completely opposed. I just need to be convinced.
Madam Chair, may I comment on Legislator Nolan's comments?
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to say that the main reason why, you know, we did, one of the main reasons why we did, why I'm putting this forward is because I received a lot of feedback from many other county legislators that, you know, we were trying to make this more widely available to more municipalities, and that basically every municipality has some park or trail project that they would like to, you know, work on. And so, you know, we felt that this was a more democratic way of approaching, you know, that funding issue. So, but I understand what you're saying, and thank you for your thoughtful comments, Kathy.
Legislator Fabiano?
Yes, my question is, so do they know what the total cost of this project will be out of the funding, the ARPA funding that's been available? Or this is parks and trails, right?
Yes, and parks and trails.
So what would be the total cost of this project?
It's my understanding that total cost would be six, that there would be a total amount of $6 million available. I would just need to check with Amber Feaster and make sure that, you know, that figure is still accurate.
Clerk Tom,
sorry, Legislator Stewart. I asked Jay to check the resolution, and she said that the resolution was quoting a resolution from August 2021. The financial impact and resolved is $5 million.
It's $5 million. Okay, so my apologies for the confusion there, folks.
No.
So what I'm understanding here, then, this project in itself would cost $5 million for this parks and trails. Is that correct?
Or there'd be $5 million funding available for multiple municipal projects around the county, each getting a maximum of $500,000.
Okay, that's my question. Okay.
Yes. And so each project would get $500,000.
Oh, I hope he's not making that noise.
Did we have everyone mute? Thank you. I guess we'll see. So I think Legislator Stewart, my only comment, and I guess I'll echo a lot of what Legislator Nolan said, is very supportive of your first resolution. And I wish we could have gotten that passed for you.
Me too.
I will have to go back and speak with Amber to see if we still have the $5 million left in the trails. Otherwise, we have put money into OSI and trails and some other infrastructure. And I think some feedback I get from the community is we've got 150-mile trails. It's absolutely beautiful. I was up in,
right.
At the Ashokan. But I don't know how I feel about putting in another $5 million. Not with the economy being the way it is. I don't know which way to turn right now.
Right.
So I don't know if you'd be willing to, just put this off for another month. If you would prefer that we do vote on it now, what was your scoring on the ARPA from the ARPA committee?
The ARPA committee meets, later on Wednesday. And so I don't have a score for that. This has been in front of them for a while. Unfortunately, it came up for a vote the last month. And unfortunately, I was unable to attend that meeting. And so it was not voted upon. So unfortunately, I can't answer that question, but I will have that answer for you. After the ARPA meeting.
Legislator Fabiano.
Yes, after listening to everything I said that's been said here, I hear some of the same things that you do, Laura. I know in my area, District 3, for the past 6 to 9 months, I've been getting a lot of flack about all this money we're spending on trails in the county. Some old timer approached me the other day. They said, we keep going like this, we're going to have more miles of trail than we are of roads. And they're starting to feel that there's more important things, yeah, like fixing our roads and bridges. And people are, they just think enough is enough. And so I'm going to be honest, I'm going to have to be a no on this.
Right. And I'm sorry, Chair Petit, may I
yes,
make another comment?
Peter Nolan has her hand up.
Oh, I was just going to say that, the focus of this is actually on parks and not trails. And one of the reasons why I did this is because, the particular project I was trying to find in High Falls is for a park. It's a park that serves as a trail nexus, but it's mainly for the park itself. And, of course, we did pass, all that funding for trails earlier in the year. But really the focus of this legislation is really intended to increase funding for parks. And that's specifically one of the things that legislators Maloney and Petit had talked about was, there's a lack of trails, for example, in the town of Saugerties. And so I was trying to make this appeal more broadly to, other communities outside of the trail network and have it really focus more on parks than trails. So that was my intent.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan? And then Legislator Fabiano.
Thank you, Chair Petit. I just want to get some facts out because it's easy to begin to see the trail network as much larger than it is. The State of the Trails report from 2020 that was put together indicated we have 75 miles of multipurpose trails in Ulster County, out of a potential build out of 120 of multipurpose trails. Now, if you add backcountry hiking trails, then you can get to higher numbers. But the kind of trails that require this support of public monies are primarily the multipurpose trails. And I think that the trails punch a little bit above their weight in terms of people thinking there are a lot of them, because there's been a lot of effort to build out a network and there's been promotion to do that. The reality is that the linkage of those trails through parks or other ways of linking trails, as Legislator Stewart is talking about, are the ways to make this network do more for the county. It already, I think, this trail network more than pays for itself by the tourism dollars that it brings in addition to the health dollars that it saves us. And there are some groups that are looking at putting together those figures to be able to demonstrate that with more than just an impression. But it's an impression that's pretty easy to give, given I think it's $500 million in tourism income in Ulster County last year. And that number stayed the same despite the pandemic, and we know why that is. So there are monies that have gone into constructing those trails, tiny monies that go into maintaining them, but huge amounts of income that come from people who come to the area and buy goods and services here, especially if they stay overnight. And they tend to stay overnight if you have a larger trail network. So that's the origin of the push to construct more trails and especially link the trails and get the trail network. What I would suggest for this committee to think about is we did have an early two projects from OSI for three trail segments that were funded, but that money was maybe half of what I would see as a good number to put towards these kinds of projects. So I would wonder if the resolution sponsor would consider maybe reducing the amount to be set aside to maybe $2 million. And since you haven't added the other sponsor yet, Legislator Stewart could do that on his own. And then I would ask for support for this, because I think that $500 in match for the Marbletown project and for a couple of other projects that are shovel ready or near shovel ready would be a good investment and make sense out of the ARPA funding. This number, I think, is a little high for, you know, what people are feeling like these other things need to be taken care of. But I think we are putting a lot of really responsible funding towards roads and bridges in Ulster County. And so I think we can do this in addition to that. And so I'd ask the sponsor to consider that and to get a reading from the committee whether that would be a direction that could generate some support.
Legislator Fabiano?
Yes, on this proposal from Mr. Stewart, I have no problem with the parks part of it at all. But I am kind of in agreement with Legislator Nolan if some of that money can be reduced from the trails part of it, maybe half or whatever. Like I said, I have no trouble with the parks. Then I could probably find myself supporting this it as a whole.
How does the sponsor feel?
I would have no problems with either of those suggestions, and I'd certainly be willing to, you know, take both of those into consideration. I would want to speak with Chris Hewitt some more, who is currently out of the country. I think that sounds great. I mean, basically, I want to get my park funded in High Falls, and I want to get the park funded in Rochester. And if taking trails out of it and, you know, making the overall ask, you know, less accomplishes that, I'm totally in favor. So I would be open to all of those suggestions. And thank you both for those comments.
Legislator Litz?
Yes, at this point, we've discussed this quite a bit. We have several options. We can call the question.
Mm-hmm.
The sponsor can withdraw his resolution, and he could put forth another resolution that accomplishes what they want to do, other than apparently this one doesn't. So at this point in time, we either call the question or the sponsor requests to postpone the resolution.
Take no action.
Or we could take no action, or withdraw it. If he's going to change it, he might just well withdraw it and put in what he wants to be voted on.
I guess my only question to what you just raised, Legislator Litz, is that the ARPA committee meets on Wednesday. I would just hate to see this go another month without making some progress, because I'm afraid the funding might no longer be there, depending on what else is coming before the ARPA committee. And I have to say that since I'm still rather new at this, I'm not really sure what would be the best way to proceed. Chair Petit, do you have any comments?
Call the question.
Not call the question. I have a comment.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that we don't want to vote on this because unless I'm reading the room wrong, you might not have enough votes. And you potentially want to make some revisions to this. So I would say don't withdraw it. Keep it active so that it gets reviewed on Wednesday by the ARPA committee, but let them know that you're considering these revisions and you want to talk to your co-sponsor about them. So it's your timing that's really driving this in terms of that.
Right.
But if we postpone or don't take any action, then you can make amendments to it before you introduce it Wednesday or before it comes back to us next month.
And okay. So I can make the changes that you and Legislator Fabiano suggested and then bring it before the ARPA committee without having to wait another month to make those changes.
Yeah, you can make those between now and Wednesday, and then it would have to come back to us next month.
Okay. Great. Well, I think that's what I'll do.
I could agree with that.
All right. So there'll be no action taken on resolution number 289. All right. Thank you. Resolution 298.
Thank you, folks.
establishing a policy to eliminate mandatory fares for Ulster County Area Transit Service. Do I hear a motion to open it up for discussion?
So moved.
Legislator Stewart, seconded?
I'll second it.
You second it, Dean Fabiano. Okay. Legislator Erner.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you, Chair Petit. So thank you for considering this resolution. This comes from my own experience as a rider and a riders group centered in Kingston that formed over 3 years ago when UCAT took over the city bus, and as well as informal surveys that have continued that I've done on buses and at bus stops. This is a leading concern among riders that we eliminate the fares. Now, Chair Petit, you and I have met with that group as well as members of the executive, and I actually at the start of this meeting saw an email from Deputy Executive Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point it has become clear that simply eliminating the fares the way that this resolution wants to do is not we can't use that direct approach, basically, because of the way that the funds work. So what I'd like to do is hold this up so that we can get more information from the executive about alternative ways to accomplish the same goal. And if that's all we can, I'm comfortable just asking for no action, but I can also go through a couple of the aspects of this that don't depend on any changes that we make, just to point out, but whatever that you think, Chair Petit and the committee.
I would like to defer to Deputy Executive Kelly as well, just to clarify FTA funding, and then Legislator Nolan, have your hand up. Legislator Nolan, is it all right if the county deputy speaks? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So Legislator Erner is correct. We're researching kind of how other municipalities have done this. Legislator Erner brought up Kansas City, I believe, and when I just did some cursory research, the way that they accomplished that was both through increasing their municipal budget and then also seeking, and then the other 50% of that was through private donations in order to show activity at the fare box, because activity at the fare box is what is part of the state operating assistance formula in order for us to continue receiving aid. The other thing is FTA, who is, I don't know the exact percentage, but they're the major funder here in our transit system. So in order to accomplish any of these things, we have to do this with approval of the FTA. Temporary holidays or targeted ways of providing relief, they've been approved in the past by the FTA, and we have done those things. But the long-term mandatory removal of all fares is, I don't know, I mean, Dennis can correct me, but it's not something that the FTA would readily agree to. We're doing our research, so I've got the budget team doing an analysis on the fare box, kind of excluding 2020 and going back a few years so we can understand what the income has been. I suspect it's between 270 upwards of 300 annually. So we're just trying to figure out like what that delta would be, and then we can engage on the creative ways, if the legislature chose to, about how to fill the delta. That's kind of where we're at right now. But the budget team should have something, just that base level analysis on fare box revenues, I think probably by the end of this week, and I'll make sure to share it with everybody in the committee. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan?
Thank you. Yes, we had discussed this in this committee and made exactly this point, that our funding for our transit system may depend upon having paying riders. And I thought that our consensus approach was to invite in the new director of UCAT to have a conversation with this committee and interested legislators on exactly this point. So we come up with a really good system. The FDA can't tell us what to do, but they can withdraw their funding, and it's huge. I mean, it's multi-million dollars. So if we want to have a transit system that functions, I think we have to do this in a way that's really smart, and I think we'll come up with better solutions brainstorming together. I think there are ways that we could perhaps particularly make reduced or no fare available to those who need it most. And something like monthly bus passes that maybe could be provided and paid for through some of the area nonprofits or with their support. I think those approaches would be maybe involve the community more in a way that makes it a shared project and have the benefit of not threatening our funding base. Even to bring these requests to the FTA would, I think, be a fair amount of work for our planning department and especially our transportation planning people. And so I don't think we should ask them for just the easiest thing that occurs to us, but instead we should talk with UCAT and with our transportation planners who run the area transit organization, what is MPO, and, you know, are hugely knowledgeable about this. So I think we need to have those conversations to have all of the legs of the stool holding up the stool. And then I fully support this vision and goal. And I think we can get there or get largely there. But I think we should do it with all of the pieces of information in front of us.
Thank you. Legislator Erner, did you have any closing remarks? And you did say we could take no action.
Yeah, no action. That's the remark. There's no action.
Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to add very quickly that I totally support the thought behind this legislation. And I agree with Kathy and everything that she just said. I also wanted to make a quick comment. I've had conversations recently with deputies Ryder and Kelly about the need for, at least what I think is a need for, building bus shelters along UCAT bus routes to increase ridership. And this is something that I think, you know, that I intend to pursue, and I think we should all look into. So thank you.
We can bring it up during the transportation workshop as well.
That would be awesome.
Okay, Deputy Kelly, and then we'll move on to our next resolution.
Thank you, Chair. So just following on Legislator Stewart's comment, I did have a conversation with Dennis Doyle, and we don't own the bus shelters or the property. We can work with the municipalities in terms of creating a capital project so we can build them and then they could continue to maintain them. So it is something that I've heard from several legislators, and it's, you know, we're in budget mode now on the executive side. So for the 2023 budget and looking at our capital programming, it's the right timing to engage in this discussion. It's certainly going to be part of our planning. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So with that, let's move on to our next resolution. What have we got here? 316. Looks like 316. Resolution 316 authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the Ulster County Board of Cooperative Educational Services in relation to intermunicipal cooperation for testing services. Do I hear a motion to open for discussion? Legislator Nolan, second.
Move it.
Second. Legislator Fabiano. Do we have any questions on this? No? Okay. So I will call the question then. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, it's been moved. Now the next, are we able to block 317 through 322? Are they all affiliated? Director Masterson?
No, the first one is relating to the Boyceville substation. Okay. The following ones can be bundled.
They can be, thank you. Okay. All right, thank you very much. So Resolution 317, establishing the capital project number 638, Boyceville substation building improvements, amending the 2022 capital fund budget. Do I hear a motion to open for discussion? Legislator Litt, second. Legislator Nolan. Any questions, comments? Hearing will not call the vote. Yeah. Did you have one? Yeah, do it, right? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No abstentions. Thank you. Okay, so I would like to call for a motion to bundle resolution number 321, 322, and 323.
No,
19 through 22. Okay, I apologize.
19, 21, 22.
You make a motion? Legislator Fabiano, second. Legislator.
Second on the block.
Okay. Are these all up in your neck of the woods?
Not all. No, not all of them. But I second anyway.
There you go. I do have a question about the superstructure repairs. I was looking at the capital project. Do you have any particular bridges pegged for repairs that have been either red flagged or yellow flagged for the last couple of years?
If I can respond to that, yes. This is a continuation of a previously established capital. We had identified four bridges that needed the superstructure work. This is going to construction for the following two. One is in Woodstock and one is in Saugerties.
Okay.
Just to clarify, this is not our red flag, yellow flag program. That's a separate capital.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, I will call the vote on the block, 319, 321, and 322. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Yes, ma'am.
Was that to create the block? That was the vote? And now we'll vote on the block?
Now we'll vote on the block.
Okay. Thank you.
Should we do it again? Okay. So we created the block. Now we'll vote on the block?
All
in favor?
Aye.
Just for good. Any opposed? No abstentions. Thank you. Okay, resolution number 324, amending the 2022-27 capital improvement program, establishing capital project 637.
I'm sorry, Laura, 323? Chips.
Yeah, I'm trying to skip over one.
Yeah, chips, 323.
Okay, well, we can't forget chips. That's the big one. Okay, yep. Resolution number 323, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget for CHIPS, Pave New York, EWR,
right.
The POP funding adjustment.
I'll make that motion.
Legislator Litz, second by Legislator Nolan and Fabiano. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No abstentions. Thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to 323, which is the Creekside Drive.
324.
324. I'm reading it. I'm just not throwing the right numbers out there.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me turn the light on in here. Maybe I can make the screen bigger, too.
Put your glasses on.
Yeah, right?
You're doing a lot.
I'll move 324.
Thank you. Second.
Second.
Okay. Any questions? No, hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, resolution 326. So I imagine 325 must be of the bond. Amending the 2022-27 capital improvement program. Establishing capital project 636, amending the 2022 capital fund budget for DPW salt storage building fabric replacement. Motion for discussion, Legislator Litz, seconded Legislator Nolan. Any questions, Legislator Litz?
Yes. I realize they're changing on six salt sheds from the darker color to white. I mean, were they due for replacement already, or?
They were purchased with a 15-year prorated warranty, and they are ending early, so we got a discount to get them replaced. They're failing in part due to the color.
Okay. I'm good.
Okay, Legislator Nolan.
Appreciate that, and glad that they're being replaced when they need to be replaced. And I know that the use of salt in Ulster County is something that the Highway Department tries to minimize. Are all these buildings right sized for a reducing winter severity that has happened over the past decade and will likely continuing happening? And would it make a difference in terms of how much we have to pay for any of these replacement shields, tenting?
We have, we're allocated a certain amount by the state every year. Past few seasons, we've been low. We tried to conservatively use the salt. But these facilities allow us to store what we ask for. Our allocation, we actually do that in March. And then we start buying in September. So these facilities allow us to store what we request from the state during their OGS process.
So it may not be this year or this, you know, maybe not until 15 years from now, but I think it's worth considering, you know, the sizing on those buildings. And does the Highway Department, since we're talking salt, do we use a pre-salting solution before the storms come?
We do not.
Well, that my understanding is that far less salt is used and far better de-icing is achieved by those pre-icing techniques. So maybe that's something that you can look into and we can consider whether or not that's, you know, how to potentially transition over to that. It's very strongly recommended by the State Highway Department.
Absolutely.
Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Litz.
Thank you. I was glad to hear that, you know, we try to be as judicious as possible with our use of salt. I was wondering if what the county's policies are regarding salt usage near waterways.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also curious as to, you know, if we are looking into possible other alternatives to salt.
Salt is what we mainly use. We use a mix out in the mountains to get some additional traction. All of our trucks are calibrated so that we're not over applying salt when we don't need to be. But we do not have a set policy as far as when we're adjacent to waterways.
Because I understand that, you know, salt can play, you know, have some fairly substantial environmental impacts, you know, on creeks and streams and lakes. And so perhaps that's something that we could look into, perhaps, you know, maybe coming up with some guidelines for use around waterways and the use of salt.
I know New York State is conducting a pilot program up in the Adirondacks to do just that.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Do you know when that is going to happen or when we'll see results from that?
I do not know.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
That's a study that's in process, and I think that they may be able to report back out sometime in the next year or two from the last presentation that we've heard on it from the Forest Preserve Advisory Council, where the New York State DOT comes and talks about those things, especially for the Adirondack Park.
Thank you. Legislator Litz.
Thank you. A couple of points. In my past employment, the use of the amount of salt that is being used is under constant microscope, and the policies on the use and the application rates. I was back in 2002. We were reducing rates and utilizing and studying different materials, adding magic, those types of things. So, I mean, that's ongoing. That's part of, moving forward. The other thing is legislator Nolan brought up a good point about sizing the buildings. I think maybe we should be looking at increasing the size of the buildings because there's an economy of savings when you purchase the salt. And if we would have purchased salt 2 years ago as opposed to this year, we would have probably paid almost half of what we're buying it for today. So if you have the facilities to store it, it doesn't go bad. I mean, it's not like, if you buy vegetables and put them in the refrigerator. And we could capitalize on the savings for the county.
That's a good point. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As long as we're really sure that our salt storing facilities do not leak or leach, it could be that larger buildings would make sense. That's why we're
replacing these roofs so they don't leak.
Well, yes. Well, also, we don't want water running in for sure. So, yeah, so I hope this conversation is helpful to the Highway Commissioner, and maybe we can return to it with some more information as it becomes available.
Thank you. All right, hearing no other discussion, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. All righty. Next, I have resolution number 328.
I'll move it.
Okay. Second.
That's the contract that we just talked about.
Okay. Oh, we should have bundled those two.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next is resolution number 329, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with LW Tree Service. Motion for discussion.
Legislator
Holland, seconded by Legislator Litz. Any questions on this one? Okay, hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. And last, we have resolution number 335, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $44,870, causing the aggregate contract plus to exceed $50,000, entered into by the county with Complete Building Solutions. Do I hear a motion for discussion?
I'll move it.
Fabiano, seconded by Legislator Nolan. Do we have any questions? I've seen Lauren Johnson on here. I don't think he's here anymore. Oh, yep, there you are. Hi. Okay. Any questions for our Director of UCAT? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you. So we are going to move into old business now, which is going to be a transportation workshop and discussion about it. If any of our legislators have had enough after an hour and a half, otherwise you're welcome to stay with us. We do have several members of the public, and this will be an open forum so that we can get as much input as we need. Let's see here.
Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Madam Chairwoman.
Yes, sir.
I know you promised this would be over at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I have another commitment at 7:30. I can stay for a few minutes, but then I'm going to have to.
Thank you. Okay.
Yep. Thanks.
I appreciate that. Okay. So I'm going to open this up and I'll make the print bigger. Given that the transportation and housing issues were such big ones, they moved transportation out of economic development into public works. Of course, housing is with health. There's been several discussions with our UCAT director, Lauren Johnson, with our county deputy, Chris Kelly, and with the Kingston, now I'm going to say this wrong, the Kingston Riders Group, as well as several legislators, Phil Erner, Dean Fabiano, and I think he had to step away. Legislator Erner, you mentioned Aaron as well, Levine. So again, this is an open forum. What we're looking for to start, and Kevin Smith did get back to me. He had a conflict at 6:30. Obviously, starting at 7:20, he wouldn't be able to make it. He does want to stay in the loop and stay on our emails. So I think the first course of action is a recommendation for stakeholders and other individuals to bring to the table on this. The purpose is going to be for a transportation network that services the whole county. And probably, thinking outside of the box, it won't just be our public transportation, UCAT. It would be, we could think of private bus service, cabs, trails, bikes, any type of complex intermodal opportunities. It is a large county. It's a county that I think based on tourism, but also with many individuals at the income level where owning a car and paying for gas that's exceeded $5 a gallon is going to make it difficult. So with that in mind, where are we looking for our stakeholders? Legislator Nolan, you mentioned the Trail Committee, Trail Advisory Committee, and of course the Ulster County Transportation Council. So we have Catskill Mountain Railroad here.
And I think that the planning department is doing a lot of work also with UCAT. And I think hearing from the public about the needs that aren't being met is good. And then maybe we can return to what we do have in place and what our plans are, because there may be things that the public is concerned about that we're already addressing.
That's a good point. What about including tourism?
That makes a lot of sense that there are overlaps between functional transportation needs and tourism transportation needs, and the riders can help fill out a system because you need a certain amount of riders to make any system work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we want to have that developing in parallel, if not collaboratively.
Any other ideas? And folks, feel free to speak up. This isn't like a legislative committee meeting with, Yay, Cheryl. Okay. Oh, you just went mute again.
Bill also has his hand up.
I'm sorry. And Director Johnson too. Okay. And Legislator Stewart. Okay, so we will go with Legislator Erner, Director Johnson, and then Legislator Stewart.
I think, Director Johnson, you were up before me with your hand.
I apologize.
Thank you for conceding, Legislator Erner. I just want to mention the last comment as far as tourism. I have been meeting with Lisa Berger, who is the Director of Tourism. So that is on our radar to do some collaborative work with them, as well as reaching out to our health department and making some connections there as well. Making this a countywide initiative to work collaboratively, because each of those entities have some unmet needs when it comes to transportation and servicing the constituents of the county as a whole. Another group that I've just started working with is also the Office of Employment and Training, and coming up with some creative ways to actually facilitate some transportation gaps that are there and fill those gaps needs in as well. So it is a ongoing process, and this is some things that maybe the public isn't aware of, because we are in those preliminary phases of actually starting to reach out and understand how we could essentially take care of home first and foremost. Because really the county is already servicing a lot of the riders and understand some gaps that are already there as a whole. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Legislator Erner.
Okay, thank you. I am just really excited about us having this discussion. I want to thank the chair and the committee for considering it, and members of the executive team as well, and especially the public for motivating it and bringing the needs and the concerns to us here in the county government. Folks in this space may know me principally and originally as an advocate for public transit, mass transit, better and more busing and things of that sort. But I also want to point out that if we're talking about transportation generally, then we need to think about the fact that many people pass through our county who aren't from the county, whether it's for business or pleasure. The fact is that the roads and bridges get used for commerce as well as for personal transportation. And so when we think about things like equity and in terms of who can get around now, as you mentioned, Chair Petit, with the rising price of gas, and many in our community have never had a car, and now it's becoming increasingly unaffordable, but also freight and things like that, and thinking about how are we going to do this with less fossil fuels to that sort of equity, environmental justice, dealing with the climate crisis. This is a really big issue overall that we're talking about here. So I'm sure with the experience and knowledge in this space, we'll be able to sort of hone in on some ways to tackle it. But I would have been remiss not to mention what I see as the big scope of this here. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Stewart and then Cheryl Snyder.
Thank you, Chair Petit. I just wanted to kind of reinforce my earlier comment about what I think is a real urgent need. If our plan is to increase ridership on UCAT, I think we need to build shelters so that people can, you know, stand there and wait for the bus and not get soaking wet or freezing cold or, you know, blasted by sun or whatever. I think that, you know, I drive down 209 in Stone Ridge, and, you know, you see people all bundled up during the winter, you know, waiting for the bus, and that just doesn't look very pleasant. And I think that if we had functioning shelters along the routes, that that would really, you know, contribute a lot to increasing ridership. I spoke with Executive Director Kelly, you know, and I asked him, it's like, well, you know, like, what are the guidelines for these sort of shelters? And it's my understanding that basically every municipality kind of does their own thing. And I think it would be really worthwhile for us to look at perhaps having standardized designs for bus shelters throughout the county. So, you know, so that people who are in Ellenville, you know, can expect the same standard of service as people who are in Kingston, or people who are in Saugerties, or people who are in Shandaken. I think that looking into some sort of, like I say, standardized design for these shelters, preferably something that is, you know, aesthetically pleasing, as well as functional, you know, would be a great thing. And, you know, and I'm not really sure, you know, how to go about doing that, perhaps eliciting comments from the public or from our town supervisors, perhaps, of what they're looking for. I think that might be something, you know, to consider doing. But I think that some sort of a standardized design process for these shelters would be, you know, valuable to look into. I also want to, again, express my support for Legislator Erner's comments about making ridership either free or as affordable as possible for underserved communities. And I also want to comment about how important I think having good service to SUNY Ulster and other institutions of learning and public libraries for that matter too. I think that should be higher on our priorities, since, you know, folks, if we're looking at issues of equity, I mean, you know, people who maybe don't have access to computers or to you know, the sort of amenities provided by a public library, I think that, you know, we need to be sure that we have excellent service to colleges and schools and libraries. And not saying that we don't already, but I'm just saying, I think that that is something that we should, you know, focus on. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl Snyder.
Thank you, everybody. Sounds like our public transportation system is being envisioned to expand and become like a multifunctional. It's going to be a hodgepodge because I'm just kind of brainstorming. Some stuff's been said. We've got to extend the hours because there's a lot of discussions about people who can get to school in the evening, but they can't get home. People can only migrate halfway back to where they need to be at night. We should be also, along with high school and colleges and the libraries, large housing complexes and large employment, and Lauren also spoke to the fact he's already meeting with the heads of those particular communities and services. I envision park and rides at the entries to the cities so that people can get off out of their cars. And if we have functional bus systems that are circulating around the local towns and cities, people can leave their car. And we already have like rail trails that go to like the edges of towns and cities that already have park and rides. So we can see what we can do to parlay off of that. Is there a possibility maybe of intermodal using school buses when they're like sitting vacant in the middle of the day and after hours? And, you know, like a public-private kind of thing. I know the school bus companies are struggling as well. And yeah, I kind of see capacity for e-bikes, as well as using our waterways, the Rondout, the Esopus, the Wallkill. What can we do to get on the water, at least small scale transit? That's a good thing. And I, you know, we have county roads, we have state roads, and we have federal highways. So when you talk about these bus shelters, not only do you have your municipalities, but our designs have to meet the criteria of like the US Highway 9W, US Highway 209, State Routes 213, 32, 28, and on and on and on, 199. So we're going to have, you know, there's a lot of work. So I think I could envision a whole subcommittee just on shelters and working out all the kinks on that. But I'm very excited to see this stuff moving forward. And if we do bring in tourists, that's a revenue stream that can offset transit for other people who don't have the capacity to pay all the time or pay at all. Thank you so much. I'm excited about all of this.
Legislator, I made you a legislator, Director Johnson.
Not quite yet in my career path. So I kind of want to touch on a couple of things. You guys are bringing up some very great points, many of which are things that we've already identified here since I came on board. I would like to say the last comment is about the waterways is something that I didn't think of yet. So, you know, I put that down on the list there. But just to give you guys a little insight to what we have done, you know, we talked about the colleges and everything like that. We have that New Paltz loop that we currently have, and I'll be meeting with that group actually in the next couple of weeks. To discuss the entirety of that contract there and moving forth and how we could be a little bit more creative with that. But also I've been meeting with SUNY Ulster, and one of the great things that I'm working with them on is actually getting a list of their upcoming course offerings and then devising and giving their students information about how to get to and from that class utilizing UCAT so we can have that posted and shared out with those students going forth with that. I think a lot that we're going to be doing right now is one part educating our public about the services and how we can link up and they could utilize our services to get to and from, whether or not it's school or work. I could say I'm still waiting for BOCES, Steve Casa, to actually get me some information and data back from his program so we could identify that gap that's there. So we could see what services need to be augmented to actually better service that population so those students can get to and from their internships with that. I kind of want to go a little bit further back, and I know Legislator Erner, you know, had the resolution that he was proposing there. But I just want to caution people to say that it's not free transportation. There is always a cost of things, and so the best way that in the industry that we kind of convey that is no cost to use service, right? Because someone's going to pick up that tab and everything. And so instead of saying free transportation, it's more so no cost to the rider service, because they need to understand that someone's still picking up that tab, of course, in order for us to be in compliance with FTA guidelines and as well as get our reimbursement through STOA. One of the biggest things that we're going through right now is route optimization, and that's where we're really looking at all of our routes to become more efficient. And the more efficient that we could come about our routes means that we could then take those inefficiencies and put it towards more service or extending out services where it's needed. And so that's an arduous process, and we are underway of doing that, but we're hoping with that we'll see some short-term gains, immediate gains right away. And so, you know, one of the biggest complaints that we've heard was regarding the internal support that we were providing to our riderships on the weekends. And so we actually just completed our bid process today with the union, where we're ensuring that we have people inside the offices on Saturdays and Sundays to fill those calls from the public. You know, for those people, I heard someone mention that, you know, computer illiteracy or even access to computers to be able to look up ride schedules or whatnot. So now they have a person that will be there, and that schedule will go into effect on July 10th, just to be in compliance with the union regs and everything. But these are short-term things that we were able to listen to the public and get that feedback and make some instantaneous changes right away to make some improvements with that. We're very aware of mirroring the services. We are very concentrated heavy with our services right now in the morning compared to the evening. We have a dramatic drop off with that. And also prior to COVID, there is a number of routes that we have not even brought back into service. The idea is to not bring those back right away, is to actually go through this route optimization process to see how those routes are going to need to be designed to fit the new need of the county as a whole. So I just kind of want to throw those little tidbits out there with your group and see if there's any other feedback that can be beneficial for us going forward.
Before Legislator Nolan, Tanya Garman is on the phone, and she said she's been waiting to speak. Tanya, are you still there? Tanya, you are muted.
Star six.
Thank you. You're still muted. Did you try star six, Cheryl said? There you go. Perfect.
Okay. Thanks. I wanted to say that it's great that this work group is happening. And I think that it's very, very important for the group to understand exactly how the systems work. For instance, route optimization, how is that being done specifically, like precisely? Is it left to a couple of people in the UCAT offices, or is it a collaboration with the planning department? Is there any regular, is there a, what are they looking at when they do route optimization? With the STOA funding, it's another example, is the STOA funding, does everybody understand exactly how that works? If rides become free to the riders, is that money that comes out of the budget at first, and then with the miles, riders per mile, does it get reimbursed? Exactly how this stuff works, I think, is really, really important to understand in order to discuss it. Thanks.
Thank you. I just had a Mr. Rice email me. I guess you're on the call. Would you like to speak? Steve Rice? I think he said. How about we'll go with Legislator Nolan while we're waiting to find everybody.
Hi. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Go ahead, Steve.
Yes. Hi. I just... I would like to help with this group. I'm interested in seeing the transportation system as a whole grow together to include trails, waterways, possibly rails in the future, and certainly the bus service. So anything I can do to lend what I've learned in the past few decades, I'll be glad to lend.
Excellent. And are you on the mailing list already, or did someone You are.
You sent me a message. I believe it came directly from you, from my Traffic Safety Board affiliation.
Cool. Okay. All right. I don't want to miss anybody.
Well, I'll be paying closer attention to the issue, and so if you miss me, I'll be asking for attention. Trust me.
There you go. That's good to hear. Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thanks. I think the comments about understanding the transportation system are very much on target. And the planning department prior to COVID did do periodic public workshops to explain federal funding on various things, including housing and transportation. Very helpful. So perhaps using online technology or some form of hybrid, we can see if we can prevail upon the planning department to do some of that and UCAT to do some of that to explain where they are. My particular interest is in the microtransit work that I believe UCAT has been undertaking in coordination with the planning department. No, there was a public forum. I wasn't able to attend that evening, so I'm looking to stay connected on that and get some feedback. I make it want to raise it in priority because I live in one of the most rural parts of Ulster County, and we do have good UCAT service, but I think it's going to be very hard for that service to provide all that we need. We don't have sufficient service to allow people to use UCAT for work. And somebody just mentioned that to me again this past week, that that between the fact that the jobs that are being offered are part-time and want often weekends and the UCAT schedule, they don't think they can make it work. So I encourage them to call UCAT and try to, you know, get into the system on it. And so we can continue to do that. But making some of these workshops available to the public, again, I think is helpful. And if either Director Johnson or Director Doyle have an update on microtransit for us, one of the other features of microtransit is that done properly, it can be low or very low carbon by using electric vehicles. And I think that it's already been articulated that should be a very prominent part of our process moving forward.
I agree. If we're going to put more cars on the road, they better be electric. Legislator Stewart.
Sorry about that. I just had a quick comment, and this is relating, I guess it's following up on kind of what Kathy was saying about coordinating UCAT schedules to employment opportunities or business, business hours. For example, although I do not represent Ellenville, I know that there's the huge marijuana growing facility is going to open in Ellenville in the not too distant future. And I think that, it would be important to have, decent bus service to that facility. We're talking about how UCAT can relate to tourism, and one of the largest employers, also a great tourist attraction, is the Mohonk Mountain House. Granted, that is not an easy place to get to, but perhaps bus services, those types of facilities, is something that we should look into. And your idea of, coordinating UCAT service to universities based on their schedules is great. And I hope we can see more of that. And especially not only as it relates to educational facilities, but also as it relates to, places of business. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we have Director Johnson, and I do just have a quick question, because we've heard about identifying, and you referred to them as transit points, which would be larger areas, either large housing or large employers, where you would focus probably more on service. But how much is overstepping then? I mean, obviously, you're the professional here. If you wouldn't mind, bringing that up as well, as we come up with ideas and, look into financing and discuss options, do you want us to get into like the real, the real, here's where you should go. After you, I have, Ernie Hunt and then Tanya Garman ready to speak again.
Okay. So. It's one of those things, chicken or egg, right? Do we make service kind of affordable to increase ridership, but then we also need to have the drivers and the infrastructure in place to be able to support that, right? And so this is where we have to be very creative, but also strategic about our initiatives when we're looking at revamping this entire network, and just looking at the complexity of things. I think before we get into the minutia of the, you know, how we reimburse, we should look at those tangible low-hanging fruits that we have right in front of our face, which is our fare structure right now has about roughly about 14 different options, right, of fares. That's hard to manage. I mean, that's something that's very tangible that we could say as a county and look at and kind of address real time and say, hey, we have a full fare and we have a reduced fare. Flat is easy. It's simple, right? And really identifying those low-hanging things that will make a difference going forth. When we talk about where we're going and places of interest and transit points and everything, it's that we also keep in mind, again, going back to the fare, we could pull a bus or create a route to go to certain areas, but can those people afford to get on the bus, right? And so going back to the fare discussion there, making sure that we're looking for equitable ways holistically that people could actually utilize the system across the board. So, you know, I believe Tanya had the question regarding what is RAP optimization, who's a part of that process. Of course, that's something that is more terms towards people who are experts within that field, but we can explain it in the best way that we're looking for efficiencies. We're reducing costs in certain areas, whether it's the number of miles we're going or having more direct routes, or having more timely routes that could reduce the hit ways down to a reasonable number or time frame for people that are especially out in our further areas such as Ellenville, or you know, going up there to, someone mentioned Mohawk Mountain, being able to have access to those points. It's all about understanding the demand versus our actual resources. And I think what we have right now is a higher demand over than the amount of resources that we have. We have all the vehicles, 100% electric vehicles. We have all that in place, but if we don't have the tangible, a driver in that seat, doesn't matter. And so that's our greatest resource, and that's something also that I'm working with the Office of Employment and Training on, is that how can we market it? How can we go out there and develop different ways to recruit new drivers into our system? I believe someone mentioned about microtransit, and we kind of wanted to get an update on that. I think it's June 24th, we're submitting the actual grant into NYSERDA. So they did give us about a 2-week extension on that. So we are expecting the final draft of the proposal that's being done by VIA to be in the county's hands here this week, hopefully, so we could review it and give our feedback to it. But after our submission, I believe we're looking at, don't quote me on the date, but I believe it's July 18th, is that we will be doing our formalized pitch to NYSERDA regarding the microtransit, which then by then we're hoping to hear something back from them by the end of August or September, whether or not we are the winner of that. But it's also a grant to keep in mind that even if we don't get the grand prize, there are still some funding availabilities within that, to my knowledge. So we could see how we can utilize that funding to go kind of go forth and fill in those gaps as we were talking about earlier within the rural areas. I think one thing that we cannot overlook is the work that has already been done through that partnership with Sustainable Hudson Valley and VIA in the county, because we were able to get those funding dollars to actually look at our county as a whole and where those gaps of resources are. And so we have a good baseline of some good tangible data that otherwise we would have to go through the planning department, go out an RFP and get that information and get a consultant in here to kind of do that work for us. So we have a good baseline to kind of move forward with things. And I'm kind of excited about taking that and then building upon that as we're going through this route optimization process for our entire county as a whole. And keeping in mind that, you know, the microtransit is really mostly to identify those gaps that those people truly in need. So that's why it's focusing heavily on Kingston and New Paltz and Ellenville as the primary areas that we're, you know, essentially testing out this microtransit and seeing if it will take care of those gaps that we have identified there. Yeah, so I kind of want to shed some light on those things.
Thank you. We'll go with Ernie Hunt and then Tanya Garman.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hunt from the Catskill Mountain Railroad, and just wanted to comment that the railroad is a potential transportation mechanism that you all might be able to integrate into the plans of the county. You know, we've had a plan to extend the tracks up the Basin Road and provide a shuttle service from Kingston Plaza to the Ashokan Trail. And if that can be useful to the county as a part of the transportation infrastructure, we are very happy to work with the county to do so. So the state is putting in quite a bit of money into the crossing protection. We just signed a contract to upgrade the crossing at 209. We have more funding available for Washington Avenue and potentially additional funding through the state for other things on the rail corridor that really have no cost to the county. So I just want to mention it to you as if it can be useful in terms of being integrated into the full plan, we are happy to work with you all on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Tanya.
Hi. I wanted to bring up partnerships like the New Paltz Loop. Is there a threshold for when those partners grow enough to deem them appropriate to be taken over financially by UCAT? Because maybe that ridership, now that they've grown it by funding it for a while, UCAT can actually be reimbursed because they've got enough riders per mile. There are other ideas to actually do that with too. There's partnerships with school buses, increasing ridership with the school system, new housing projects. We're always hearing about a new housing project planning on having a shuttle bus to the malls or into town, and a partnership would really also add infusing neighborhoods with other incomes is a benefit in many ways. And this is an example where maybe it's a neighborhood with a mostly higher income, but there's always people who need the bus, and we want to really have people opt into the bus. So when projects with people with lower income are there, we should let that benefit happen, where it would be more of a demand for a bus stop because you've got ridership there, and then the neighborhood would benefit because then people can opt out of it. And the resorts as well, there's very rarely buses to, like was mentioned, the Mohonk House, there are no buses that I know of, but also Kingston Point Beach near the Hutton Brickyards. People are going to these places with public transit often and would love to be able to jump on the bus into town. And so these kind of things could start off with as partnerships like the New Paltz Loop, where they're subsidized by the people who are asking for it. But in the end, maybe the ridership was increased enough there to have UCAT be able to fund it. There was something else. The optimization, I feel like we do need more information on that, on how that's done. There are, for instance, is a program like Streetlight being used? Is it being done just, like, who are the experts? I don't think it's unreasonable for the public to be able to follow along with that process, because UCAT is not necessarily tuned into everything that's going on. You've got the people who are out there are a wealth of information to be used towards that. Thanks very much.
So just to follow up with that, were you thinking of doing at a next workshop, doing a presentation on the systems and the funding, and just so we could get more educated on the actual system? Tanya, is that what you're...
I'm definitely asking for that. Yeah, I love what Legislator Nolan pointed out, that we used to have some information coming from the Planning Department on funding. But UCAT could be putting out and then she mentioned also that UCAT could be doing similar things, and that's an example of that of explaining to us what they're thinking in terms of optimization and reaching out for some more
feedback regarding that, for sure.
Okay. All right. Because I think your first 100-day vision, you were only here about a week or so. Director Johnson, you have your hand up.
So I heard this comment about school buses kind of thrown out there multiple times now. So let me just address this real quick. Underneath FTA guidelines, there's a certain thing called hours of service. And so hours of service relates to how many hours someone in a safety critical position can actually be at work any given week. And that threshold is 70, right? And so when we talk about mixed use of, you know, school bus drivers operating on their downtime for UCAT or vice versa, right? We have limitations in which we can't exceed that because then it becomes a safety issue, right? And so as I was saying earlier, one of our most valuable resources is the driver itself. It's not getting a vehicle. We could get vehicles. We have vehicles, right? It's the driver itself, and we have to understand that we're limited by the number of hours each driver could actually safely operate that vehicle for us and everything. And so that's just one of the multiple factors that we have to keep in mind here at UCAT in designing the routes and how the headways are designed and how the runs are designed, because we have to take into that account of what's our infinite resources, the number of drivers that we have there. Totally open to working and understanding the need to understand better our funding sources and everything. We could provide that information there. It is very convoluted sometimes in a sense, but, you know, not without getting down into the weeds, but to be able to give an overview of how the money is actually funded in, who's it funding through. That's something very simple that, you know, we could provide. And, you know, I could reach out to the planning department and see what they have provided before in the past. But it is a very, it's a formula, as with any state funding or federal reimbursement. That formula is very interesting, to say the least, to be able to get back to that dollar and all how it comes. But I think what might be more beneficial is to provide an understanding of how much it actually costs to operate said routes. And that's something that, you know, after my meeting with Legislator Petit and Legislator Erner and Deputy County Exec Kelly, we're looking at the cost of our reimbursement, but more so is how much is that actual route costing us to operate? Because if we only have, you know, 10 riders a day on a route versus 30, 40 riders on another route, right, that's where that STOA funding is coming to play to kind of offset those costs and those expenses to kind of supplement those routes in those areas that typically don't have that high ridership amount there. And as we are moving towards electric, you know, I've been working with Nick Hosda and the Environment Department to get an understanding of what's the true cost of the electricity that we're putting into those vehicles to run these electric vehicles and everything. And so, you know, we usually go off of miles per gallon when we look at, you know, unleaded and diesel fuel, but then there's a thing called MPGE, which is how much is electricity is going to cost us to run this route and everything like that. And so those are little things that we will put into place when we're looking at route optimization. It's a total picture of that entire route that we are looking at. And when we say that, I know Tanya has been mentioned twice now about, well, who's part of that process? But when we make any changes to a route, large changes off of a certain threshold, we're required by FTA to engage in public hearings and public meetings. And that's the point in time that we will engage with the public and offer up feedback on the changes that are being proposed with that and everything. And so there is a process for that. And so, you know, it's one of those things, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen will kind of go awry a little bit. And so we let the experts be the experts, which will be my team. And if we need to work with the planning department to bring in some other professionals to help and assist with that, we will do so, because it is a lot of data intense work to be able to do that work efficiently and everything. So again, by opening up those public hearings, which will come at a later date, That's where we want to get that feedback so we could go in and make some fines.
Cheryl Snyder?
A few things. Whatever your inputs are, kind of have a major impact on your outputs. So one of the things to consider is, in your optimization, is how do we get more ridership on those low travel routes? Not mm-hmm. just how much it costs us per head to travel up and down a corridor, but like, what are we not looking at? How are we like leaving people on the wayside? That's number one. Number two, waiting till all the experts have done their thing and then bringing us the final product to take a taste of is so backwards. That's what we're actually trying to reorganize here, is that we need to put people in the process ahead of time. Yes, there are transport experts. So you're using traffic analysis software like they do for the telephone system, correct? Like, you know, what's your bandwidth? How much capacity do you, you have? How many calls are on, you know, so forth and so on, which is, you know, don't assume that people in the community don't understand what the experts do. We just need to know exactly what the experts are doing. So, because some of the assumptions are wrong. And I think, you know, I would like to see a more diverse set of input before the final product. It's the wrong place to bring the community in. That's why we told Via to go in another meeting with Kingston Public Transit Writers and Friends, because don't cook it all up and then ask us to rubber stamp it. It's like, it's going to be our transit system. Talk to us in the process as you're making assumptions. You know, it's really important to have the right set of criteria that you're looking at the entire project with. So just as I said, don't assume that you have to cut routes because you have low ridership. How about upping the ridership? So like, let's try to reorg the way everybody's been looking at this stuff, because clearly what we've been doing has not been working. So let's not keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again. And this whole thing of like, you're the experts and then we're just like, it's like you're leaving the whole magic of what we can create here and now and moving forward in this county of unlimited possibilities. So let's not get stuck with like, well, the software doesn't do that and this is how it's always been done and this is what the experts say, because I've seen so much freaking boilerplate coming out of the public sector and major public works over and over again, from everything from federal, you know, scientific research studies on and on and on. So I think we have to like think differently, and we have a major opportunity right now. So I just encourage out of the box thinking.
I love that idea. Legislator Nolan, before I go to you, Nettie's Michael said he's in our waiting room, but I don't see him anywhere. You don't see him either? Tanya, maybe you could have him recall in, and I'll keep an eye out for his name to pop up.
Okay.
All right, Legislator Nolan.
Yes.
And then Director Johnson.
Yeah, so I just want to highlight that I think that this forum is out-of-the-box approach and is exactly that invitation to come in and be a part of the process in an iterative way. That is, we get information about gaps and what's needed, concerns, we do some brainstorming with ideas, and then some experts can go crunch that to see how that can fit in the other side of the equation that the transportational professionals have, which includes things like staffing, funding, safety considerations, moving towards a low carbon future. And so then they come up with an idea, a plan even, and come back to us. And I'm really feel gratified that in the current administration, both in the executive's office and the agencies and in the legislative side, that there's a real desire to embrace that kind of collaborative decision making. And I don't think we can expect either side to get it exactly right. And sometimes we'll use language from paradigms that weren't so collaborative, and then we can call each other on it. But I think we should be open-minded about this attempt to try to have a more collaborative process in advance of planning and along the way, so that as things go along, we get that feedback without weeks or months or years of frustration. So this is a forum, I think, for each step along the way to receive that kind of attention from the public as well as from all the other stakeholders.
Okay, Director Johnson?
That was a great point by Legislator Nolan. Since I've gotten here and then just running down the list, Legislator Erner actually reached out to me to actually meet with the group of Kingston writers and friends. And so I have been very gracious to open it up and facilitate that and want that feedback from them. But that's not the only group. I have to provide a service for the entire county as a whole. And so there has not been a meeting with any outside entity that I have not extended that offer to really work together and partner together. I'll give you an example. When I met with Bozies, they have a direct connection with a lot of the employers in the communities and everything. And I told them right away, I said, hey, I want to set up a symposium where I'm offering up where, all the employers are coming in and talking about and expressing those needs and gaps of services for their employees to get to and from work. When are their shifts? When are those things designed to be able to be a better partner with them with that? Can you offer some fringe benefits to your employees to entice them to take public transit and everything? Can you do like a, public transit day where all your employees have to take public transit to work and everything? So there has been a lot of engagement, best practices, professional practices within transit agency is always to gather and work with those entities and start bringing them together because not everybody can meet on this platform here. And so I think it's a little premature to say that, UCAT and the county is not taking a global perspective to get that feedback. We are. And, as long as I've been here, which I know it's only been 3 months here, but that has been our practice going forth, is to reach out to those entities and kind of work with them as partners to understand those needs and gaps because they know what their employers need or the reason why their employers aren't getting to work, right? They know that whether or not is our service not running on time or we having delays as affecting their business and their bottom line there, right? We know from the schools like, hey, kids with internships and everything could get there, but they can't get away back. So these are all those various feedbacks that we are getting by extending that olive branch and extending our ears to listen in first and foremost and not respond back. And this is that good work that was done in partnership with Sustainable Hudson Valley and VIA when they did those outreach and everything. They did surveys. They were at the bus stops. They were reaching out with those stakeholders such as the Mohawk Mountain House and SUNY New Paltz and all those entities in those communities to say, hey, what are the needs? You represent a much larger body and a large demographic of the riders that potentially should be riding in our buses or is riding our buses with gaps, right? And so we're getting that feedback. So to prematurely say that we're not doing that or that we're just going to be operating in a silo and then say, here's the plan, just, there you go. That's not how this goes. This is a very engaging process and everything. And so I really will push back and tell people to understand, like, when we do reach out, we expect to get value-added feedback. It's one thing to say, this happened 10 years ago, right? But it's another thing to say, hey, this is what we're proposing as a solution that will work for our community or our demographics. That's a whole different spin of things. And I think as long as we're having solution-focused discussions, that we will be successful about working in partnership and collaboration with that. Because no one wants to feel like, hey, you're the bad guy and you're not getting things done. And so I'll just leave there on that note with that.
And understandably, public transportation is the up and coming. I mean, we had a whole exodus of New York City folks that many don't have vehicles, you know, plus the expense of just the rising cost of living and gas. And so, you know, I'd love to put 50 cents into the fare box and hop a ride. That I think is ultimately our goal, is to expand it enough and to connect everything so that we can do this. So I think moving forward, it's a whole new challenge that probably many of us didn't expect. It's always been a rural community. You know, you were 16, you went out, you got a car, because that's kind of what you did. And, you know, there weren't even any trails, Kathy. There were just a couple of little ponds that we used to sneak into. So, I don't know if Michael, if you just popped on, but you know, feel free to speak, or Steve, did you have any other, you know, anything else?
Hi, can you hear me?
Michael, yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I've been in the waiting room. So I'm glad to be able to finally talk. Firstly, I wanted to acknowledge that this is it's great that this meeting is happening. And as a UCAT rider, I have thoughts on the fare. I have thoughts on the app, and I have thoughts about the destination that it goes, the current routes go to. And so on the fare, since that was a point of discussion, I've noticed that many riders don't often have exact change, and so end up at many instances giving more money and putting more money into the fare box than the actual fare. So I think when there is some study on what's happening with the fare box, the fact that there's no ability to get change, I see people sometimes putting in $1 or $5, even $10. And so that's not representing more than just one rider. With the app, you know, that is probably my entry point into figuring out when the bus is coming, best entry points, when the bus is coming, and how far away is it. And it often the schedule and where the bus appears on the app, like the icon of the bus and the information on when the next bus is coming, they don't really match up. So there needs to be some review of how the app is working, because it's actually not getting the best rider information dynamically. And then in terms of destinations, I just wanted to bring up, because many other people brought up great points about destinations that are just over the county line and hubs that provide regional transportation. So whether that be Amtrak at Rhinecliff or the Trailways bus, so that UCAT riders can also connect to other transit systems in other counties, and other regional options.
Thank you. Steve, were you going to say something as well?
No, I'm just happy to be part of this process. Okay. I'd like to see a master plan, but this is the master plan to deal with the problem as it evolves.
Yes. Yeah. And if you would like to help me with that, I can send you some of the notes I've been taking, because I had kind of thrown some discussion points in there which haven't been addressed. So I'm going to leave those out and take what is a general consensus of this group here today. What about Great. Director Doyle? Or are you just going to listen? I'm putting you in the hot seat.
No, thank you, Chairwoman Petit. Appreciate that. I just want to echo some of the things that Lauren had said, and that I think it is unfair to say that the process in which the system has evolved over time has not outreached to the community well before we've essentially come to a conclusion in terms of what changes should be made. We've done studies beginning in 2003, 2006, 2009, 2013, 2017, 2016, we've continued to take a look at this transit system. And as part of that look, we've always essentially outreached with stakeholder groups, forming stakeholder groups, sometimes as many as 8 or 10, pop-up interviews for people that are using the bus, surveys on the bus, et cetera, et cetera. So when you look at where we are in terms of the transit system right now, that transit system has evolved considerably compared to where we were in 2006, and where we are today. And I think it's evolved in a way that essentially has been very helpful in terms of moving to a spoken hub system, which we currently use, beginning to provide service to Poughkeepsie, moving to service so that we can service down into Orange County. We're the only county in the region that has operating authority outside the county itself right now. And I think it's important to recognize the fact that this is an organic system that has evolved over time. Has it kept pace with all the needs? Probably not. Does it need to change? Probably yes. But I think it's unfair to say that we're not open to change, or that this kind of work that you're seeing right now is something that we haven't done before. We have, and we will continue to do that as a transportation council. And I would also say that we're also engaged not only in looking at the transit system, but we're also engaged right now in a three-county study in terms of freight movements relative to that. And we also engaged in something called Oster Connect, which looked at all three counties in terms of how the bus systems operate in all three counties right now in terms of recommendations. And the MPO, the Ulster County Transportation Council, was responsible to essentially move to have VIA come into this county and examine microtransit, because one of the first recommendations that came out of the latest study was we need to think about how microtransit could essentially help to meet the needs of this county. The last thing you know is that the Transportation Council currently is programming federal money that supports your transit system. That federal money is moving into allocations that come down from the state in terms of that the amount of funding that's available. We're going through that TIP update right now and be looking at adopting a TIP prior to September at the end of the federal fiscal year. We're also engaged, quite frankly, in a number of other studies that have an impact on transit. And the last thing I would say is that when we look at our review function under local land use powers from the planning board's perspective, we continue to make recommendations with respect to how site plans are designed so that transit access is where they're capable of transit access. So you're starting to think about how you can move buses in and out of projects, where bus stops can occur, making sure that sidewalk connections are there so that when transit stops, there's a place to get through the project into the building itself. And there's a holistic approach to the transit system. We're engaged in the trail studies. We've done a number of trail studies. We did the one that that legislator Nolan just mentioned up in Phoenicia in the Shandaken area. We've done that study. We're currently engaged in trying to fund a study in trying to fund construction of a project that runs from Kingston to the UND. We're finishing up a Midtown Linear Park. We're engaged in looking at making sure that the OSI funding that went through provides particular areas. We've engaged several developments so that regional trail systems can go through it. We're currently trying to take a hard look at in terms of how we can extend regional trail systems into the Saugerties area. We're also engaged in funding for elderly and disabled individuals, something called a 5310 program. We're in the process of reviewing applications for those fundings, having conversations with those folks that essentially get 5310 funding, so that we can start to look at transit as a service in those areas rather than a particular project owning a bus, that we look at how those buses can be used to provide transit as a service within the region that the project sits. There's a lot of work that's ongoing with respect to transit, and I think it's important that we recognize that work continues to be ongoing. We also need, I think, to recognize that we're in a fairly opportune time to essentially look at how transit is managed and how it can work. And part of that has to do with the fact that there's dollars available, not a lot, but there's some dollars available. The other thing is that the technology has come a long ways in terms of how to treat on-demand transit service compared to what it was many years ago. And there are other options that are available to us. I think that the leadership, both of the prior administration and this administration, in looking at making sure that our transit was operating and could continue to function, particularly during the COVID work, has been really phenomenal in terms of the dedication of those workers that to continue to operate buses and put themselves in harm's way during the COVID crisis, I think is to be commended. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we are pushing 8:30. You know, I'm happy. I'm a night person. I could go, but did you? I'll open this up for some email information. I think what I'm hearing is first we would like to set up just a public information meeting. Is that what I'm hearing? With information about the finance and the UCAT, availability, or do you want to go right into work groups? And there's enough here, as someone said, you could probably spend a significant amount of time just on bus shelters, where we could break it down. We could do, ridership and marketing and outreach. We could do an expansion of services and help identify transit points. Or we could just look at a complete connectivity of intermodal. See, Kathy's thinking, but Director Johnson has raised his hand.
if I can suggest, each group that we talk to and everybody on here probably has a different spin on what the actual needs are. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be a consistency of and a prioritization of what is the top needs and what will yield the biggest impact, immediate impact, with the understanding of what has been shared by myself today, to really say these are the top three things that we really want to focus on. And that will help streamline some of the work and that pull, us in multiple different directions. Because if you pull us in too many directions, we're not going to be very good about what we need to focus on and everything. And there's a lot of big things that we are currently working on. And I think, this is only just a tip of the iceberg. And Dennis did a really good job as far as given a complete rundown of a lot of things even before my time that we're working on. And if we really go in depth about some of those things, it might open everybody's eyes to understanding how complex this change and this transformation is. It's not a simple, hey, let's meet as a group. Let me tell you where that bus needs to go. And boom, we're going to have new routes and we're going to have drivers and service. It just does not work that way. And so it is a very convoluted system and network that we need to prioritize where we're spending our time and attention to, understanding that, what might be a priority number one from this group in this discussion might actually fall on our priority in a timeline of doing things as maybe number four or number five. And we need to be able to convey to you guys, hey, this comes before that, in order to make sure that we are doing things in an efficient manner, kind of going from there. I did also want to just touch very quickly on someone mentioned about Farebox. I believe that was Steve or somebody that came on there about people having to put $5 and $10 denominations on there. Aside from us having an increase of counterfeit bills that has been hitting our Farebox in $5 and $10 denominations, right? We are actively working on procuring newer Farebox systems that will be future-proof, that could be able to handle Apple Pay, credit card pay. So if you don't have dollars per se, or if we give you a RFD transit card from one of the agencies, you'll be able to get on a bus and utilize that. So that's something that we are hoping to have in place here by coming in the beginning of 2023 and everything that, will be an immediate impactful change that we could do to the system there. And then I believe someone also mentioned about our ability to just, put things in a computer and voila, we have these routes.
UCAT does not have any fixed route software. So let me say that again. We do not have any fixed route software. So when these routes were created way back, it was pretty much pen and paper and a map. So we don't have a software to actually put this information in and do so, right? And so this is the old school, you know, push pen and paper type of mentality of how we're doing things. Do we have routing software for our demand responsive services, our paratransit, our ADA service? No, that's more so of just a scheduling software that we use to organize those things. So, you know, there's this misconception that we're like a full-fledged authority with all these softwares and technologies around us, but we are far from that. So again, this is why working in a quote-unquote professional arena of a silo first and foremost is needed, so we could produce that work and everything. And so I just want to throw those things out there, and I said my
piece. Thank you. Okay. So I had a suggestion that we should wrap our meetings up in 2.5 hours, but I do have so closing remarks, please, from Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Erner.
Just following up on what Director Johnson just said, I think it would be helpful if we maybe limited, I shouldn't say limited, but if we focus on, you know, 3 or 4 major points, mm-hmm. I think that's a wise call. And of those 3 or 4 major points, I think that shelters is one that we should investigate, and the fare issue that Legislator Erner brought up, you know, is definitely another. And I was going to say that if, you know, folks are interested in the shelter issue, that I would certainly be willing to work on a subcommittee or special working group or whatever you want to call it on that topic. So those are my comments.
The third one be, I have bus shelters, fares, and
Those are two that came out that seemed obvious to me. I'm not sure where the rest of the group would want to go on the others.
So. Okay. I'll come up with something. Legislator Erner.
Muted. Phil, you're muted.
But it was very profound what you just said.
Thank you. It was in November last that Legislator Uchitel made a comment. We were at the near the new circle at Upper Broadway and 587 Albany Avenue to remember victims of traffic violence. And Abe said it's long been part of the American dream to get yourself a big, fast car and go hit the open road. And our future, it can't really continue to look like our past for so many reasons. Our future dreams have to be different. So what does that look like for us here in Ulster County? Private car ownership and operation is just getting more expensive. We're going to have to figure out ways to share more. And that's a cultural project as much as it's a government policy project. In the United States, there's 132 households with 286.9 million vehicles, so almost one vehicle per human in this country, and about 2 per household. So, and every month we pass all kinds of resolutions funding our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, and so forth. So I believe in us, and I believe that we can do this. We can lead to an eco-thriftier future where poor people really have the rights in transit that everyone else has. And that's about it. Thanks.
Okay, very good. All right, so I have typed down you know, four issues that have really jumped up. So we will have an opportunity to discuss how we'll be addressing them. And I'm not going to keep anybody any longer. But thank you. I mean, I think this has been amazing. We've gotten a lot of input. We have a real nice selection of, you know, professionals and local organizations and stakeholders right here. And I certainly do appreciate your time. We're going to come up with an amazing model for every other county in the nation to follow. All right. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
Laura, motion to adjourn.
Oh, we have to adjourn. Okay. Motion
so
to
moves.
Adjourn. Second.
Oh, okay. You got that? That was Legislator Stewart and Legislator Nolan.
Gotcha. Okay.
Call the question.
Good thing. Yeah, should I call the question? Do I have to?
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Thank you.
Everyone okay. In favor, please leave.
Good night, everybody.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, right?
All right.